I want to talk a little bit about the power of the culture in our lives and how much we inculcate, bring it in to our sense of self, and how hard it is to escape from that, because it's reinforced every day by everything and everyone. And as much as we try to surrender or let go of the perceived personal identity, everything around us tries to bring it back. So we are kind of caught in this dynamic of freeing ourselves, if you will, and being entrapped over and over and over and over until you finally simply let go. At which time, the cultural influences become extraordinarily instructive. They're no longer defining of you as much as they are revealing of the universe that we live in. But the escape valve, trying to release yourself from the endless imprint of everything and everyone around you, is an unbelievably dynamic effort. It doesn't happen by chance. If anything, chance puts you deeper and deeper and deeper under its thrall, and you are caught. You are just caught for a lifetime, and a lifetime that's completely supported by everything around you. So all of your struggles, all of your pain, all of your false dreams, all of your hopes and ambitions are completely colored by everything around you, and very little is informed by you, by your own unique self. You keep trying to conform to the world around you because that world is so insistent and so powerful and so in your face all the time. And even if you try to turn it off, even if you turn off the TV, even if you stop reading newspapers and magazines and looking at your computer, you're still, you were born into that world. It's had inroads into you from the very beginning. And most people don't even think to try to get out of it. They don't even think that it's a problem. They just want to try to buy into its truth, which is you can have happiness. You can marry the prince. You can have wealth that will give you unending pleasure and joy. These are its primary tenets, that somehow or another life has these gifts to offer you, and that you want those gifts because you feel if you work hard, you'll get them. Now, this is very much talking to a capitalist culture of our time. You know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, maybe it was colored a little bit differently. Maybe you didn't have the same push to become the princess or to be living in the castle. Maybe all you really wanted was enough food on your table every night that your family would be happy and full. And that could have been enough. And that also is part of the culture because the reinforcement that takes place in an agrarian society is that you want to have food, you want to have comfort, you want to have shelter, you want to have all the basics that your family requires to be a happy family, to be a growing, expanding family. And if you don't have the basics, you really do suffer a lot, and the suffering is become almost unbearable for many, many people. And in those days, in the old days, you would have tribal culture. Tribal culture would mean that you either all worked for the betterment of the tribe, or the tribe started to create hierarchies. And hierarchies were very common in worldly culture because there was always someone who had more power, more force, more capacity to run the show. There was always a healer or somebody who would have power to make you feel better. So already you were in the beginning of a cultural dynamic that said, if I could have the power to be in charge, to be able to take care of the war parties, to take care of the ability to conquer another tribe to get their food, then I would have happiness. Or if I could be the healer, I could be the person like whoever sells us toothpaste or aspirin. You know, I could have that power. And you would start to have these desires to have more than you had. So it becomes, it's very early on, this desire to manipulate the world in your favor becomes very powerful. And the world is in your face all the time trying to tell you that your happiness will be based on gaining this power, this sense of well-being from the forces around you. It's really interesting when you try to separate from the power of those dynamics, when you try to pull back and you try to imagine freeing yourself from the pull of the world. What do you do? How do you do it? And it's interesting, you know, many, many centuries ago, Buddha decided what you really have to do is leave the palace. Leave it behind. You have to go off into the woods or the caves, and you have to sit still and begin to let go of the pull of these incredible forces. And he actually had to leave the palace. Most of us don't have a palace to leave, but he had to leave his family, his mother, his father. He had to go out into the world. He had to see the suffering of the world. He had to sit still for a very, very long time and begin to watch what it was that owned him, what it was that the culture was doing that was pulling him so strongly. And of course, what he discovered, which any of us would discover if we sat still long enough, was that that pull from the culture became woven into our nature. It became woven into our identity. So we started to feel exactly what the culture was telling us to feel. We started to feel that we were powerful in the culture or we were weak in the culture. We were intelligent and able to lead. We were unintelligent and needed to follow. We were told that there was more out there, that there was a release from suffering, or we hoped there was. We were given all of these ideas that became us. And it's funny how these identities start to form no matter what you try to do to avoid it. You know, Buddha was raised in a castle with pleasure, and he wasn't even allowed to look out at the world and see all the suffering around him because his father knew if he saw that, he would suffer, and he didn't want him to have suffering. But Buddha was a human being, and he knew there was suffering, and he escaped from the palace for a short while and saw it clearly. He saw that it was out there, and it really affected him, and he wanted to know, how do I escape this suffering and this old age and this decrepitude and all these things that happen to us as people? And so he just sat and started to let go of all of these things, and he started to feel that a lot of what he had to let go of wasn't outside him, it was inside him. It was his own nature. It was his own having bought into the system. It was his own sense of, I am a former prince. I am somebody who needs to let go. I am somebody who needs to free himself of suffering. And he went through this incredibly difficult, painful journey, and in a sense, discovered that it didn't exactly work. That the freedom that he was looking for was so there that he didn't really, in the end, have to free himself. That the freedom was at the core. That the freedom couldn't be escaped because you were already free. Because there's nobody to liberate. There is no one who has to let go of all of this because the secret was there is no one. There's no one there. You don't have to free yourself of you because Where is that you? Where is it? And his awakening was freedom from this created, manufactured self that this culture had built and that he had entwined in his own mind, in his own emotions, and he had bought into it. And he saw that sitting itself isn't going to liberate you. Withdrawing from the culture is not going to liberate you. Something else has to happen. Something else has to be realized. And how does that realization happen? Well, I don't know that Buddha would have realized without sitting in the woods for all that time. There seems to be an effort that has to be required to try to escape the very thing that you think you are. And only by failing at that, in a sense, do you suddenly, if you're lucky, realize that there was no you to escape. But it's so ingrained, it's so interesting. My granddaughter, her mother did not want her to buy into the princess culture. Do not buy her princess costumes. Do not read her Disney books. Let her be free of those fantasies. And she was really not exposed to all of that. And all she talks about now is living in a castle and marrying the prince. Where did that come from? How did it arise inside her? How did this world culture come through if her mother blocked it? Well, of course, you all know how exposed we are. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. How do you not get it into the system, you know? And it's so fascinating to watch when people try to keep their children from the dark side, let's say, from fairy tales. It's so fascinating. You know, fairy tales, in a way, in the brutal Bettelheim world, they used to be tales that told us about real life. You know, in the original Cinderella story, the stepsisters try to cut off their toes and their heels to get into the glass slipper. They want it to fit. They want to become the princess. And they're willing to brutalize themselves. And it's a dark world. In the Disney version, you know, of course, that would never happen. The Disney world that we all inhabit, and trust me, we were all raised on these movies that people live happily ever after. You know, every one of us were brought into that world, which is made so homogenized. It's made so full of little Tweety birds who help, you know, create the magic in your life. And, you know, they dress you and there's magic and there's pumpkins and there's all of these extraordinary things that happen in our lives, and something in us buys into that idea. So we're all looking for magic. We're all looking for someone to come and you know, put a magic wand and bibbidi bobbidi boo, and we're no longer the person we were. And you know, it's problematic. I just read an article about this. This guy's doing an artwork in England. It's about Disneyland, but it's the dark side of Disneyland. And so Cinderella's carriage tips over and she's killed. And all the paparazzi are taking pictures of Cinderella. The castle, the great castle, is falling apart. Is breaking down. It's kind of the underside of the fantasy life that we have built up as our universe. Even in our spiritual universe, we've created fantasies. We've created fantasies of power, of empowerment. So many people go into a spiritual search because they want power. They want freedom. They want the ability to manipulate the universe to make it theirs. They want their intention to be realized. They want to be able to use spiritual work to get money and to live happily ever after. So many people, that's what they're looking for. And they're hoping their spiritual life will bring them this, when in fact it can't bring you that. And the reason it can't bring you that, and I will come back to this over and over, is because there's no you to have it. And as long as you are reinforcing this idea that there will be a you that can be free, you're in trouble. Because the only way freedom occurs is for that you to evaporate. The only way. trying to preach this idea to a world caught in its own fantasy life, in a world that is built on the dreams of power and money and success and, you know, health coming from all these quarters, you know, new diagnostic machines, you know, doctors who will be able to give you all these medications, all of these ideas that are out there. And we all know they're false. We all know they're false because everybody dies. Everybody ultimately either gets sick or gets damaged in some way and leaves this plane of existence. The happiness that most people get is very, very limited in time and space. You have it for a little bit and you lose it. And then you go, what did I do wrong? Well, you didn't do anything wrong. Happiness comes and it goes. Sadness comes and it goes. Everything comes and goes. The only thing that doesn't come and go so much is your ability to latch onto that stuff, your ability to hold in place all of these ideas of who you are, of what you want, of what you need, of what life owes you, of what you should have had, what you didn't get. All of this stuff plays on in your mind, in your emotions, day in, day out. And the one thing that can free you from all of this is the thing I've been talking about a lot. Sit down really quietly and watch how you have been building this structure that you call you. And when you start realizing how these mind thoughts come from within you and from without, from the culture and from within you, the part the culture built within you, you start to realize you have woven your own identity. You are responsible for the person you think you are. And once you realize that, you have the beginning of the power to unravel it. And you can begin to unravel it by paying an enormous amount of what I would call fierce attention to your creative process. Watching this stuff come into you and take hold, and then finding a way to go, no, not right now, thank you. Nope, later. Not going to engage it now. These things come into you, and they are thoughts, and they're ideas, and they're feelings, and trust me, in the beginning they can be very simple ideas, you know, about yourself, you know, I'm a good person, I do good things, I'm nice most of the time. Yeah, once in a while I'm not so nice, but that's not terrible. You have these sort of gentle feelings about yourself. Some people's feelings are not so gentle. Some people's feelings are, you know, I really screwed up all those years ago and I'm paying the price and I really did terrible things and I deserve everything I get. Or these embattlement modes that you feel, I'm going to fight the world and I'm going to build my way through it. I'm going to construct what I need. I'm going to get rid of everyone who's in my way. You know, there's so many identities that we all have and we're all constructing and building and doing this all day long. But when you start to go, whoa, come back to your stillness, and that's a meditative act. Come back to stillness and watch the process. And once you get a handle on it, once you see this thought identity coming into play and starting to lock in, once you see it's becoming you, just go, no. And it's really interesting, once you start to do that, how you begin, first of all, to stop constructing this false self, and secondly, you begin to get the idea that all this stuff in you is a false self, or a temporary self, and you can let it go. You can begin to unravel and unthread it. And the quieter you get, the more you can pull at these threads, undo the knots, chop at some of them if they won't untie, break it apart, and free yourself. And really, spiritual practice, meditation, the meditation we've been doing for however long you've been doing it, its core element is, at least in this practice, please help me to surrender. Meaning, help me to let go of the thing that adheres to and jumps at and crystallizes all of these thoughts and emotions into an identity. And the more you surrender and surrender and surrender over a period of time, weeks, months, years, or decades, more and more of this encrusted content that you call you begins to loosen up. It begins to wash away. There's a lot of washing to be done. Any of you who've overbaked something in a pie, in a bowl or in a pan, or you know, you when you start scrubbing and you go, oh my God, you let it soak and you have to scrub more and then you have to put more soap on it. Then you try every technique you can to get all the deep encrusted stuff off. That's what we are. We've got baked in stuff inside. We've got stuff that's locked in for years. You know, we've got bat guano built up in our brains. We have so much stuff in there and you've got to clean it out, and it's infectious. So if you're cleaning it out and you start to breathe it back in again, you've got more problems. So you have to really cleanse yourself of yourself. And then this idea of help. It's really interesting. If you ask for help, you don't have to do it by yourself. There are these amazing forces, it may even be a singular force, that comes in and says, sure, I'll help. And it starts to do a lot of the grinding for you. It starts to create situations in your life that actually are breaking down situations, that start to cleanse you of old ideas and old attachments and old things. You may not like it. You may not like it. It's sometimes scaldingly hot. It's sometimes abrasive. It's sometimes painful. But it's breaking stuff down. It's breaking it down and breaking it down and breaking it down, and it's washing it away and washing it away. And it's doing it at your invitation. And it only does it, well, not only, because it often works against your invitation, but it's always working for you. It's working for you to free you of you. And if you take this process seriously, if you devote what I would call a lifetime to this, you and this helping force, which I can call your higher self, God, oneness, starts to become the partner, if you will, in your life journey. It starts to work for you, or you begin to realize that it's always been working for you. And its primary goal, and much as this is often scary for people, is to liberate you from the very idea that you are not it. That's really what it's trying to do, to free you from something that thinks it's somehow other than this one cleansing force that absolutely flows into the universe and functions for every soul on the planet and every blade of grass on the planet, every bird and spider, every newt, everything that's there is served by this. And we are incredible facilitators for servants of this one extraordinary truth. But when you've built a separate self into your identity, it can still serve, and it does, it still serves, but it doesn't serve with the same brilliance and finesse and clarity as when you get out of the way. And when you are truly out of the way, you are being used and you are being made a channel for, a faucet for pure flow. And that's what we are. And when that really starts to take place, the experience is so I'll just use the word beautiful. It's so beautiful because you are arriving at what you're here to do and be, which is your true being, your true self, and you are nothing but an expression of that self. I talked about this in Big Indian last week, the idea that you realize that there's no one separate person looking through your eyes or hearing through your ears or breathing through your nose. There's only one reality that is what you are, and it sees through your eyes, and it smells, and it hears, and it touches, and it's not you. It is, I mean, it is you in the fundamental sense, but it's not a separate you. It's a non-interpretive you. It doesn't feel something and say, oh, that's good or bad, or oh, I love that, I don't love that, or oh, that's ugly, that's beautiful. It's totally non-interpretive. It just looks. It just sees. It just knows. It knows. And it's unbelievably compassionate. It just cares about what it sees. It loves, if you will, what it sees. And at that point, it's really interesting because the culture is no longer forming you. The culture is being affected by how you see it. You can look at the culture and go, aha. You have a deep, profound understanding of why Walt Disney created a world of fantasy for all of us. You can really understand why our stories have always been stories that, in a sense, support the idea and the fantasy of separation. And that the great poets and the great novelists and the great playwrights try to break through that. And we're really very drawn to those people, the Walt Whitmans, the Rumis, the Eugene O'Neills, all of those people who can help us suddenly see through the immersion in false identity, become celebrated. They're the celebrated artists of our lives because they're helping us see there's something else, there's a crack. The great philosophers, Lao Tzu, you know, Buddha, the great avatars, Christ, you know, come to the planet to help us cut through the culture. And the culture tends to obliterate them, or try to, because the culture has its own life and it wants to keep itself going. But there are people who break through that. And if you become one of the people who break through that, you become a voice just like those artists. You may not have their skills and their talents, but you will have truth on your side. You will have the ability to be with another person and just, by being, free them. The greatest poetry in the world is just presence and being. You can just be with someone else and they will know. They won't even know how they know. They'll just know you in your presence has released them from something. They will like being around you. They will want the thing that you are. And you will help them by just being, realize that they're already that. That's a real gift. And so the whole idea of meditation, the whole idea of a practice, is to be able to look at the world around you with great compassion and great love and see exactly what's trapping people and entwining them and help release them. Each person, each one of us, becomes a helping source. And that's a gift. That's the gift. When the culture finally frees you to see what it truly is. When your own person frees you to see who you truly are. When you let go of the entwining, entrapping nature of your own separateness. When you start seeing everybody else caught in that dynamic. And you know that you can be with them in a way that can help free them. You can do it by gently holding their hand, putting your hand on their shoulder, listening to them when they talk, looking at them when they speak to you, hearing their voice, being true to their truth is a great gift. Then if you want to go out and build Habitat for Humanity or go help people in Haiti or whatever, you can do all that. But the real helping, the real helping in the world is your presence with others. Your presence with who is, whoever shows up. And what shows up is amazing. What I've really come to see is the universe brings you exactly who it needs to bring you. And your job is just be there with them. Be there with who shows up or what shows up. And if nothing shows up, just sit still. Be quiet. Or watch TV. It kind of doesn't matter. The most amazing thing about this extraordinary energy that comes through you is it operates when it wants to. It does what it needs to do. You're not in charge of it. When it's not surging through you, you know, read a magazine. You can even read the newspaper. You can look at the culture. It's very entertaining. I mean, the culture is very entertaining for us, for oneness even. You know, there's a reason the universe exists, and it's not a mistake. It's deeply entertaining. Singleness, oneness, likes its own two-ness. It likes the way the world works. It loves it. It's totally captivated by this. I mean, in many ways captivated in ways that we are here to help them get uncaptivated from, because people have gotten so caught in the culture, so caught in the manifestation, that they have found no way back. They've forgotten. It's like being in a movie and totally forgetting you're in a movie. You know, because I've talked about this before, but when I was a kid, my mother would used to have to say, "Honey, it's only a movie." You know, because I used to be like, I was totally in it, totally. I couldn't walk out of that theater. I mean, I was like, I was there. And in a way, the great spiritual teachers are saying, "Honey, it's only a movie. It's only a life. It's only a temporary thing." And that's what we're here for, to try to do that. And to take each of you as gently as possible and help you find that. Last week I had one student who I talked a lot about oneness, God energy, if you will, as maternal, as mommy. And having a mommy who comes to you and tells you it's going to be okay. And they hug you in this incredible place that I thought everyone had at some initial moment in their life, when, you know, your mommy takes you in her arms and just goes, expresses this love. And this one student started just sobbing. And she had never had that experience. Her mother did not want her from the get-go, nor did her father. Her father left and her mother just kept her alone. And so when I talked about the embrace of mommy, she just couldn't bear it. And I never thought personally, as I'm speaking, how that wouldn't be available to everybody. But what I understood immediately, and I think is very easy to understand if you finally let go of the separate self, is that that mommy does exist, but not necessarily in material form. Not as a mother, as you know mothers or think mothers should be. Ultimately, this generative force from which we come, which is both maternal and paternal, which brings us into being in the first place, and which we are in our very essence, has within it this love, embrace, and it tells you it's only a movie. Everything's going to be okay. I love you. That's what it tells you, over and over and over, really, if you can hear it. If you're caught in your story, you may have missed out on the mommy who tells you that, the real mommy or the real father. If that's the case, you need to undo that part of the story. You have to unweave your attachment to not having been loved. You have to unweave your attachment to the suffering that that brought about. You have to really say, "Please help me." And have that energy arise that really does help you. It really will help you. It really does love you. And that's what we're all looking for, in a way. And then you realize the one false statement that I'm making here is that it loves you. What you discover is that you are it, and it is love itself. That's what it is. You don't have to be loved. You are love. Let me say, you are love and loved. You are the active version of that. You are a fountain of love and giving and helping and allowing life to be. It's an amazing thing that we are, and not to know what you are is the source of all suffering. So all we're doing in this talk, in this class, in this moment, is trying to bring you back, bring you out of your mind, thought, locked in, struggling nature, relax it long enough, persistently enough, to start to fall back into this well of infinite joy that you are. That's what we're here for. And, you know, and this message will be repeated over and over and over until it's heard And when it's heard, you will speak it out loud in the same way, because it's all you'll want to do. So forgive the culture, forgive yourself. Don't walk around criticizing it. Don't walk around complaining about whatever it is you're complaining about in the world right now. If you have to turn off the TV, turn it off. But if you can, watch it, and it will break your heart and teach you about life. You can read the newspaper and learn, or you can read the newspaper and make yourself miserable. It's kind of your choice. It's your ride. Do the best you can. And remember, you have a choice. And take a breath. Ask for help to surrender. And begin to see clearly what it is that makes you who you are. Any questions? Okey-doke. If this doesn't break through to you, we'll try again next week. The week after that, and the week after that, and the week after that. And then you either decide this is getting boring, or you keep edging closer and closer and closer to the immediacy of what's being said. The most important thing here, the most important thing, is that all this truth is here right now. It's just immediate. It's absolutely immediate. It's not anywhere else. You're not going to understand it better next week. It's not going to hit you more when you're 50 or 100 or whatever. It's never going to be anywhere but in this very instant. And all you have to do is totally get out of the way. And let it go, yes. Thank you, guys.